But most people are very competitive in how we try to do better at work or get a higher promotion or whatever. There's like this series of little video speaking things on the web called TED Talks, and they're about certain things. But he referenced this TED Talk about this Harvard Business Study, and he said what we really need to do, instead of leaning in to our work or leaning in to get a bigger house or whatever, we need to lean into the relationships. And this TED Talk from this Harvard Business Study backed that up. Because I guess, and this is kind of interesting side note, I guess back in 1938, Harvard took like 738 people, and they started tracking them. And they're still tracking. There's still like, I think, 25 of them left or something. And there were two groups, and I don't know what the first group was, but the second group was sophomores at Harvard College. And so they graduated. I think World War II had just started when they graduated. And it was kind of a social study. And they've asked them questions. And they said some of them started, some of the people in the study started low, and they became great. In fact, one of the person, and I didn't read who it was, but one person in the study actually became president of the United States. I don't know which president it was. But it said the study and all the data that they've collected over the years points to one fact, and that's people are happiest when they have good relations. Doesn't matter how the world sees them, as far as whether they're living in a big house or become president of the United States, their happiness is dependent upon the relationships they have with other people. But he said we need to lean in to our relationships. And that got me to thinking, because I'm not very good at leaning in to relationships. In fact, I'm probably horrible. And in the back of my mind, I got to thinking about a story in Genesis. And I wasn't sure where it was. I had to go back and research it a little bit. But, you know, because I tend to be very, I don't know what the word is, but I hate my enemies sometimes. I still love them. You know the old story, and they have the two glasses of water, and one has like dye in it, or you pour a little dye in the water, and the whole water gets cloudy. And I'm the guy that wants to take that water and throw it away. The cloudy water. I want to throw the whole mess away. Start over. And that's not what we're called to do as Christians. And there's a story in Genesis, I think, that really points out how we're supposed to react. And if you'll indulge me, this is a little bit lengthy story, and it goes into a couple other areas. I want you to think about four things. I want you to, because there's a little bit of a background story here before it even gets into the part that I was thinking about. And it's in chapter 18. First of all, do you know when God is talking to you, or do you know when God is present? I think that's the first lesson out of what I'm going to read. And the second, do you believe him? And you'll see, and you probably, some of you know what this story is, they didn't believe him. And that was kind of the background story. But then it goes, but there's a third part of the story. Would you be willing to stick up for people that maybe were cloudy, the red water? Or would you be willing to throw them out? And are you willing to talk to God like Abraham talked to God in this story? So I want you to think about that and indulge me. I know this is a little lengthy, but I want to read you the whole chapter 18. It says, "The Lord appeared again to Abraham while he was camped near the oak grove belonging to Mamre. One day about noon, as Abraham was sitting at the entrance to his tent, he suddenly noticed three men standing nearby. He got up and ran to meet them, welcoming them by bowing low to the ground. 'My Lord,' he said, if it pleases you, stop here for a while. Do we always know when the Lord is near? Abraham knew it was his Lord. Rest in the shade of this tree while my servants get some water to wash your feet. Let me prepare some food to refresh you. Please stay a while before continuing on your journey. Not only did he know it was the Lord, but he welcomed him. And he got food for him. All right, they said, do as you have said. So Abraham ran back to the tent and said to Sarah, quick, get 3 measures of your best flour and bake some bread. Then Abraham ran out to the herd and chose a fat calf and told a servant to hurry and butcher it. When the food was ready, he took some cheese curds and milk and the roasted meat and he served it to the men. As they ate, Abraham waited on them there beneath the trees. Do we wait on our Lord? Where is Sarah, your wife? They asked him. In the tent, Abraham replied. Then one of them said, about this time next year, I will return, and your wife Sarah will have a son. Now, Sarah was eavesdropping, right? Now, Sarah was listening to the conversation from the tent nearby. And since Abraham and Sarah were both very old, and Sarah was long past the age of having children, she laughed silently to herself. How could a worn-out old woman like me have a baby? She thought. And when my master, my husband, is also so old? Then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh? Why did she say, can an old woman like me have a baby? Is anything too hard for the Lord? About a year from now, just as I told you, I will return and Sarah will have a son. Sarah was afraid, so she denied that she had laughed. But he said, this is not true. You did laugh. Do we laugh at the Lord? Do we think that things are impossible when they're really possible? So this is really the story that I thought about when I was reading that little blog, is this next part. But I thought the first part was important because it sets the stage. Abraham intercedes for Sodom. Would you intercede for Sodom? I wouldn't. Most days. But we need to. We need to be like Abraham. Then the men got up from their meal and started on toward Sodom. Abraham went with them part of the way. Should I hide my plan from Abraham, the Lord asked? For Abraham will become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed through him. I have singled him out so that he will direct his sons and their families to keep the way of the Lord and do what is right and just. Then I will do for him all that I have promised. Do you think the Lord was thinking about keeping from Abraham because he thought he might have a hard heart and he didn't want the leader of his chosen people to have a hard heart? Maybe. I have heard that the people... So the Lord told Abraham, because he decided to go ahead and tell him, obviously. I have heard that the people of Sodom and Gomorrah are extremely evil and that everything they do is wicked. I'm going down to see whether or not these reports are true. Then I will know. The two other men went on toward Sodom, but the Lord remained with Abraham for a while. Abraham approached him and said, do you guys approach God and ask for things that you think might be against his will? Maybe they're not. Abraham approached him and said, will you destroy both innocent and guilty alike? Suppose you find 50 innocent people there within the city. Will you still destroy it and not spare it for their sakes? Surely you wouldn't do such a thing, destroying the innocent with the guilty. Why, you would be treating the innocent and the guilty exactly the same. Surely you wouldn't do that. Should not the judge of all the earth do what is right? And the Lord replied, if I find 50 innocent people in Sodom, I will spare the entire city for their sake. Then Abraham spoke again. Since I have begun, let me go on and speak further to my Lord, even though I am but just dust and ashes. Suppose there are only 45. Will you destroy the city for lack of 5? And the Lord said, I will not destroy it if I find 45. Then Abraham pressed his request further. Suppose there are only 40. And the Lord replied, I will not destroy it if there are 40. Please don't be angry, my Lord, Abraham pleaded. Let me speak, Suppose only 30 are found. And the Lord replied, I will not destroy it if there are 30. Then Abraham said, and he was kind of pressing his luck. Do you guys press your luck? Since I have dared to speak to the Lord, let me continue. Suppose there are only 20. And the Lord said, then I will not destroy it for the sake of the 20. Finally, Abraham said, Lord, please do not get angry. I will speak but once more. Suppose only 10 are found there. And the Lord said, then for the sake of the 10, I will not destroy it. The Lord went on his way when he had finished his conversation with Abraham. And Abraham returned to his tent. I think Abraham, in that case, really leaned in. Just like this guy in the blog said. He leaned in and he showed what I would call Christian charity. I know that's a King James term, but I think it's more apt than love, because love is a confusing term. But he showed Christian charity, and he went to bat for these people. I looked up some other verses on friendship. Most of them are in Proverbs. You know, sometimes I said that I want to throw out all the dirty water, but other times I get to feeling sorry for myself because, you know, maybe I'm sitting somewhere and somebody has a bigger house than me, or they've done something great, or they got a better perceived better position than I have. And sometimes I don't want to lean into those people because I'm jealous, right? Well, let's listen to a few words from Proverbs. From chapter 17, a friend is always loyal and a brother is born to help in time of need. And earlier in the chapter, it says, disregarding another person's faults preserves love. Telling about them separates close friends. And going back to the study, and that relationships matter, in chapter 18, it starts, a recluse is self-indulgent, snarling at every sound principle of conduct. And later in that chapter, the human spirit can endure a sick body, but who can bear it if the spirit is crushed? And if you don't have many friends, or if you don't lean into your friends, your spirit will be crushed. In 27, the heartfelt counsel of a friend is a sweet perfume and incense. And I don't really like this version. I don't know, there's another version that says, a sweet friendship refreshes the soul, and I think that says it better. In verse 17 of chapter 27, it says, as iron sharpens iron, a friend sharpens a friend. I've used this verse before, but I'll jump to the fourth chapter of Ecclesiastes. Two people can accomplish more than twice as much as one. They get a better return for their labor. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But people who are alone when they fall are in real trouble. Again, I think there's a better version, and maybe it's King James, but it uses the word pity. A person that doesn't have anybody else to lean on is pitied, it says. I'm not sure exactly how it says, but basically. And if we jump over to John in the 15th chapter, it says, I command you to love each other in the same way that I love you. Before I go on, I think it is funny that they call the prelude and the call to worship were both about these same things, about friendships and relationships. But this is what John 15 says. And here is how to measure it. The greatest love is shown when people lay down their lives for their friends. You are my friends if you obey me. I no longer call you servants because a master doesn't confide in his servants. Now you are my friends, since I have told you everything the Father told me. You didn't choose me. I chose you. That's pretty powerful. I appointed you to go and produce fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask for using my name. I command you to love each other. So you shouldn't be like me and want to throw out the bathwater, right? I'll leave you with this from Colossians, the third chapter, starting in the 12th verse. Since it says, since God chose you to be holy people whom he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. You must make allowance for each other's faults and forgive the person who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. I think that that verse there, you know, it's in the Lord's, it's even in the Lord's Prayer that we're to forgive others. We need to be like Abraham and go to bat for others. And the most important piece of clothing you must wear is love. Love is what binds us all together in perfect harmony. And let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. For as members of one body, you are called to live in peace. And then the last sentence, and always be thankful.